The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
When you're in school, you know, you're often being told, let's get it right. Let's get it right. Let's get it right.
Study hard.
Yeah. In the private sector, you're often saying, let's get it done. And then let's see how we can improve it. But we got to get it done. That mentality is something I'm very familiar with. And in my own life, it has been tied to my successes.
It's a wonderful chaos. Beautifully random. Messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem.
We work to find rest. What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful.
So today our show is called Falling Forward. And we're going to discuss this subject with my colleague, Andy Chaliff, and myself. Falling forward, as opposed to taking an action in your life and then it failing and then contracting backwards.
Yeah. That mental state of mind, I would say, is predictive of how successful one will be in their lives.
Yeah,
because I think we've also done shows on perfectionism, and it's not all that dissimilar, because we often don't take the risk because we don't want to look stupid or we don't want to feel the embarrassment of failure, and then we don't cherish and enjoy it. So I don't know if we had it on our show, but one of our guests said fall fast and fall. Oh, I remember what it was now. It was our guest Brad Cracchiola, who, when you weren't here with the show with Lives Not Grades, and what he did was he took a group of students and he said, hey, we're going to put you together and we want you to make and invent things that'll help refugees. We're going to go to refugee camp and we're going to have you create things that are actually important for these people and their livelihood. And in this class, it was a pretty serious class. They flew there. And they figured out things that would help these people. But the thing he said is he said, I want you to fail fast and I want you to fail and I want you to fail, fall forward. Yeah.
Understood.
Because the iteration, I've often found in my life, the iteration process teaches me far more than actually holding off till I get it right.
It's nice. So the context though of this class, mm-hmm. someone who is kind of leading or in charge is giving you permission to fail. And it wouldn't be any different than working in business and the person just says, listen, fuck it up.
Yeah.
And let's see what we discover. And then I'm just going to do it regardless of outcome and we're going to see what comes out. And if there's golden nuggets, great. And if not, great.
Yeah.
But when it's your own livelihood, it's a different matter.
Yeah, and this was what one of the things on the show which I loved, which was that on the show he would talk and he would share how he felt how important it was to fail fast and fall forward. And right after his interview, there was another teacher who was worked at the same school, hadn't worked in the private sector, so they were basically a teacher, and they said they didn't like how he was encouraging the students to fail. And it was very interesting for me because when I saw it, immediately my mind sort of had a bit of a chuckle because I saw it, when you're in school, you know, you're often being told, let's get it right. Let's get it right. Let's get it right.
Study hard.
Yeah. And in the private sector, you're often saying, let's get it done. And then let's see how we can improve it, but we got to get it done. And those, that mentality is something I'm very familiar with. And I I realized in my own life, it was very much, it has been tied to my own, what I would call my successes. Because I think in the book, remember that chapter, you know.
Which one?
In the last letter. Yeah, you're going to pick it up and read it. In the last letter, there is a moment when I got a job interview and for a marketing position of which I had no qualifications. And then I got the job as the marketing director for a company that was going to go public. And only a few weeks later, and that was a big deal because, I mean, I had no marketing experience, but now I have a $1 million budget. It was pretty scary. Not pretty. It was really scary. And what I noticed was that the first few months I was trying to hide what I didn't know. And I didn't know a lot. So you can imagine the stress I was living under.
Fraud.
Yeah. Fraud.
Fraud syndrome.
Yeah. But I think you told me in one of the books you read that the one thing you do is you burn all your ships behind you so you can't go backwards. Well, my dad at that point had kicked me out of the house and disowned me and written me out of the will. So it was really helpful because now I had to go forward and figuring out how to master this domain of marketing was the challenge.
Because you didn't have a backup.
Because I didn't have a backup, yeah. And the thing that I guess what I was getting to is, while I was playing it safe, I wasn't offering a lot of value. And then one occasion that the CEO said to me, hey, I want a press release every week. And I hadn't written a press release before. And I felt really scared because I'm like, hey, I could screw this up. I don't know if I'm going to write something that's not even allowed to be written in press releases. And then basically, I remember leaving his office and I came back in and said, listen, I've got to ask you a question. And he kind of looked at me and he said, what? And I said, well, I want to know, is it okay to fail on this? Because I've never done it. And if you want me to do this one a week, I can't guarantee you it's not going to fail. And then I saw this look of confusion in his face. Like, of course, he said, of course it's okay to fail. You know, like as if, why are you asking me such a dumb question? Mm-hmm. But I left and I felt this utter joy in my head, in myself when I left. Yeah.
Spaciousness.
Yeah.
And while you were there, did you end up asking people for support who were in the business longer? Or how did you navigate that in the beginning?
My whole life, even till today, I can't say I'm good at asking for people for support. That's not my strength. What I do tend to do is say, I want examples of people who've done it well. So that might have been also considered support. But I want to know and see what's the thing that makes some of these press releases or whatever I'm trying to study better than other things. So I tend to want to read and see the patterns, and then I'll apply those patterns to things in my life.
Nice.
So that's what I did with the press releases. I took 10 press releases that I liked. And then I said, okay, there's a pattern here. And then I started to just follow that pattern with my own press releases. Mm. Yeah. Same was true. We had a prospectus for the company was going to go public and I had to write a prospectus. So what I did was I just took 5 prospectuses from other companies. And sometimes it was a bit scary because you notice how general people can write so that you can copy and paste 60% of things sometimes. And then just change the words around. So you got to be careful. But I mean, on one level, it's scary when they talk about how computers nowadays can auto-generate books.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. They can write stories. And you think, yeah, because in a way, if you look at things, just even like the archetype and the hero's journeys, you know, we've gotten so accustomed to a version of how a story is told that you can very much take that and just simulate it to different versions of different stories. But, you know, the general flavor might change, but the idea of the journey will often remain the same. Mm. Yeah. How about you? I mean, I see, I you know what? I knew a day when this changed in your life and in our relationship to one another.
Come again?
Well, you know, those watching don't know I've worked as a mentor with you.
Yeah.
And when we would first when I'd first mentor you, you would sometimes be resistant to things when I would say them to you if it pointed out areas that you could have done better in the future, what one might call failing. And I remember there was a day when it just changed. And I don't.
Can you give an example? Because it's too abstract.
I remember an example would be like, you know, we had problems like when you broke something in the house once, right?
Yeah.
And in a prior version of you, you would have said, "Hey, I you know, it broke because," like, you would have looked at the environment and found a reason why it was the environment and not yours. And then I saw you starting to own it. So no, I did this, this happened. And it was more like that aspect of just owning your own experience and then taking responsibility was what I saw as also, maybe it's stretching it, but I see that as falling forward as well. It's like, I'm owning what happened. I'm not trying to defend or minimize it. And it's no big deal. There are consequences and I'll just take responsibility for those consequences.
Yeah. I think for me, a very recent falling forward is, so I'm doing my cold emailing every day. And yeah. Last week was really good. Like, I had a lot of successful as in clients reaching out.
Okay.
At least 5 out of the how many 300 messages I sent last week. And I got nice projects. And then towards end of the week, I had 3 of those.
Okay.
Saying no in the end.
Okay.
Because they said I was too expensive or they found another photographer. And I spent part of the weekend internally saying I need to learn better negotiation. And I had that as a story in my body. And I saw a big part of Saturday I was collapsing inside. Mm. And until I became aware of the story, I would say I wrote down fail fast. I understand that now reading that, because in a way there was a kind of procrastination in me and I went into a negative loop.
Yeah.
And then what I saw from that point is actually, no, I don't need to learn negotiation, because I was very transparent. I was very clean. I value my work. I named the prices, which felt good for me because I knew everything that they asked for took a lot of time.
Yeah.
And in the past, I would cut it down and I'd be resentful because I wouldn't be earning the value that I'd give. So in a way, I did really good, actually. So today, I just sat behind my desk and I just continued. And I think in the past, it would have discouraged me to the point where I want to call you. Or I need to journal. I need to do a lot of things to overcome the so-called loss. And in a way, I didn't lose anything. I just, in a way, stood my ground and it didn't work out.
That's great. I would say, though, that I would, with the wording or whatever happened, if you lost 3 deals, it's worth exploring what you did right. And if there's something that might be make it easier for people to say yes. Yeah.
Sure.
That's also worth checking out.
Should we do a show?
No. yeah. But what I guess the thing would be, though, is what you just said is the core issue that I've experienced in you, is that there's less lag time between when the thing doesn't go well and you just saying, okay, I'm just going to, you know, put the new thing into practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the first step for falling forward is actually to take a step into that unknown. And I see it also with the trip to Cyprus.
Yeah.
And your trip to Spain. There's like a very big empty canvas, yeah, like an artist, and you don't know, there's ideas, but there's nothing to hold on to.
Yeah.
And where I'm right now in my life is there's a complete surrender. I can't deny that there isn't sometimes visual thoughts which like, oh wow, this is really scary, and yet no, we're gonna do this.
Yeah.
And allowing myself to go there and potentially live the I don't know and fall down and having the opportunity to actually fall back or fall forward. Maybe maybe it's two steps back and two steps forward, three steps forward.
Yeah, I actually would often say I don't even see anything as stepping forward or stepping backwards, sorry. Because it was like interesting because there was that...
Unless you get paralyzed.
Yeah, that would be literal.
If you get... No, I mean like...
Oh, you mean...
It was such a scary experience that you freeze... You allow the fear to define you in that moment or the experience to define you as opposed to it's an experience.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're like, no, I'm going to go and work for McDonald's.
Yeah. Yeah. I always see the thing in terms of what Einstein said. He didn't fail so many times creating the light bulb. Well, not Einstein, sorry.
Edison,
yeah. That he didn't fail so many times doing the light bulb. He found out 100 ways you couldn't make a light bulb. In a weird way, I think that's how I've often felt when I do things. Mm. You know, with Ronnie and looking to and getting the house in Spain and starting to define or create a new life there, the one thing that I've seen is that the first thing I said or we said was this could fail and it's okay. Like even like from the start, but we won't know unless we experience. And I see we reinforce that one another. So there's no needing it to be great. There's just the, hey, we'll figure out what it is and how it works out when we're there.
Yeah.
And I noticed that in our relationship, there's a reaffirming of that with one another so that we can always stay grounded. Cause I do see if we were to bring expectations into it, oh, this has got to be good. Oh, we got to work out. We spent so much money, time, and energy. If this doesn't work out, it's a problem. Like if that were the narrative, there'd be so much pressure coming into it.
It takes the joy out of the journey.
It takes the total joy out of it, yeah.
So actually, as a human being, giving ourselves the permission to fail at any given moment and just trust that there is this thing called life force, which will carry you, even if it's not what your mind thinks it's ideal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny, huh? Like what I just said, like the mind has an idea of a perfect thing.
Yeah.
And we try to live up to that instead of being grounded and present to what's there and what's unfolding. Yeah. And at the same time, having the ability to dream.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, the point you make is one of the things that I think is really challenging for most people is they're not even aware of the expectations that they have. So they take their expectations for granted and then they blame other people when they don't fulfill their expectations.
Yeah.
You know, I was having a call with someone today. I'm on the chapter on expectations right now in the new book and I'm starting to rewrite it a bit. And I'm looking for the perfect story to put at the start of each chapter because I've changed a little bit of how I'm writing. And the story today, I wrote something and I thought, oh, that's just too banal. And then the call I had later, body hair, the topic of body hair came up because the individual female, she's got body hair and she goes, or she's comfortable with body hair, but she goes out with someone that's less comfortable with body hair. So the whole discussion became what's the expectation that both of them have from the relationship, and a subject like how do you groom yourself now becomes the challenge. Cause you can imagine if he has the expectation, this is what a woman is supposed to look like. And she has the comfort with not looking that way. Yeah. That just isn't going to be easy. Yeah.
Love it.
That's the talks I have on a daily basis.
He gets paid for that, though. I'd like to bring it closer to us, this subject.
Okay. I mean, I could say retroactive for me, but go. You were going to say something.
Yeah. Like by definition, falling forward. Like if I really feel into my body, there's a fear and just the decision to not allow the fear to paralyze you. That's pretty much the basics.
Okay. Yeah, I would almost want to reframe it, the fear. And I would say there's joy in knowing that it was always an experiment. Like that's how I live life. Like I kind of feel that there's only working experiments. And whatever those experiments give me back, I celebrate them because I knew or learned something that I didn't know before. And that way, I always try to tell you, I don't like managing against the negative. I try not to be in life where I'm like, I don't want to feel bad. So I'm just going to say it wasn't a bad, it's not a bad thing. Like, I don't want to be, I want to be like, no, I knew that it was an experiment and I'm going to now take it as something I've now learned. Mm. Yeah. That's how I like to frame these things.
Okay. But you're speaking from a context that's different from mine.
Oh, please. What is that?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur who's trying to build a business and doesn't really have, well, I feel pretty good right now, but okay. In a way, the story that I've always said was like, fuck, I've been living month to month.
Yeah.
And
you have been living month to month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's only the last few months that it's really solid in my life. So in your case, you haven't had the experience that I've had because you've always had the upbringing or whatever you've had.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So your context, when you make those statements, I sometimes like them. And I'm like, wow, I want to breathe this. And at the same time, I can't deny that there's something that you might not be seeing in when I say it as an experience.
But I live this way. I had to change to be where I am right now.
Yeah.
Like I didn't live, I didn't have.
But back then, did you, I can't imagine back then when you were making the changes that you didn't have some level of fear, letting it in and then kind of moving forward from there.
Oh.
Because
I get what you're saying. So how do you, before you shift the whole mind space, how do you deal with it?
So I would say fear is part of it, or else it wouldn't be called falling forward, or not. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I have to go back to experiences because I don't like to be in my head to discuss. I want to feel into what's a true experience, because from there I'm not making like words up that sound good. I know that when I quit everything and sold everything and started living in the attic, I lived in constant fear.
Yeah.
And in that fear, what I saw was that I was learning things about myself. So the fear was less of how do I survive? And it was more of, wow, what's going on? Like,
it was speaking to you.
I was trying to create space so that I could hear what it was telling me or teaching me about myself. And in that moment, I couldn't speak from the space you said, Andy, you can only speak from there because of where you are.
Yeah.
And that, I completely agree.
So what you're telling me, back then there was the fear.
Oh.
And
I would cry because I was so scared.
And somehow, so I use breathwork when I'm scared and to distance myself from the fear. Like once I felt the fear, like, okay, this is not serving now. I need to breathe. Mm. And it's always an opportunity for me when I'm scared, breathe, space. And then from there, creativity comes in. So what would you say you did back then? Because I don't think you did breath work.
No, I usually sat with my mentor case. I shared all my fears. Wait.
No, I love it. I mean,
I remember a lot of those talks. I remember the talk when we were all sitting around the table at Kukai, and I told them that I was scared that I was going to die homeless, alone, without any money or anything, because I just didn't have any opportunity. Like I remember spending weeks, not days, but weeks in that fear of and anxiety. And I think what I would say from my own seeing of others as well is that, you know, when you'd say, Andy, you can't relate to that space because it's not a space you're in. I would agree with you, by the way. I don't think that that's a, I don't see that as an incorrect statement. Yeah. And I'd also say that there's something where it, when I lived in fear, which didn't, the transitioning out of living in fear happened before I started making money.
That goes without saying, I think. Yeah.
And that transition came from freeing myself up from all of the anxiety. So basically doing the self-love work, saying, if I am homeless and I don't have a house and I don't have any money, that's okay. If I don't, it's fucking great.
You did that back then.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You knew,
Yeah, because I met Peter a long time ago, so I was doing that work earlier. But even if I wasn't doing it, as a tool or as an exercise, I was always doing the self-help, self-love work from early on, because I think everyone comes to self-love work at some point, because what you see is that the things that you're not able to love in yourself is exactly where you remain stuck.
Yeah.
So I would say that in that time, when I made peace with those parts of me, all of a sudden the change in the mentality we're talking about was a natural byproduct.
Beautiful.
It was similar to happiness, because we'll talk about happiness. And I always want to say, I don't really feel like happiness is someplace you go to. I feel that it's something that emerges, and it emerges when there's nothing that stops happiness from emerging. Mm. You know, and so the distraction to happiness, or the going to Disneyland or going to events in the future,
external stuff,
the externals, those are all great because they're just adding to a little bit of what life has. But the deep down happiness, like I close my eyes and everything is perfect, like that world of happiness, I only know from making peace with all the dark holes that are in my psyche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm having this, it used to be a mental concept for me, even though we're moving away from the subject, by the way.
Yeah.
But even today, if I experience inner turmoil, or I see it in other people, I automatically go to the, what in me is creating this right now? What's the story I'm telling myself?
Oh yeah.
And from there, it's so easy to diffuse it, because you said something really beautiful to me. I don't know if you said it actually, but that's what I understood. If something is occupying your mind, it's probably owning you.
Yeah.
And if you don't deal with it, then it's going to end up owning your mind until you somehow deal with it, take responsibility, make the phone call. So yeah. I've learned pretty quickly to take action and not make not even writing it down. I need to do this unless it's out of my control, where I need someone to have a conversation. But in general, I see that the faster I do that, the more space I create inside me, and then I can just be present with life, the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't make to-do lists. I get on the phone and act immediately. Yeah, I had a call today with a coaching client, and they called and they said, Andy, I've been working 2 hours on something. And I'm like, okay, well, and we went through the topic, and the topic was they needed to address an issue with one person in the company. It wasn't even that big an issue, but it needed to be addressed, so they wrote an email to address it. And I'm like,
you said get on the phone with them.
And then I'm like, are you kidding me? So if you get on the phone with them and you just solve it, it would be done in 5 minutes. It wouldn't occupy your brain. You can get on to more important things. And they were like, oh, yeah, because it's such a non-issue that you just want to hear the person's voice explain, hear what their challenges might be, make it personal. And so what this individual wanted to do is they wanted to send them an email, do the thing that they didn't agree to, and then have that other person resent them forever. And I said, no, it's not the way you work. You just pick up the phone, talk to them, resolve it quickly, and then move on.
And an email is really tricky because the person receiving it can interpret. They can I think this person is being is bullying me. They can project into the words
everything
depending on how they're feeling. Yeah. If they're in a loving state, I can imagine it. Oh, that is beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So you're at the mercy of the person receiving how they're feeling in the moment.
And what I saw was that, you know, the, and I see what stops it from happening is when a person gets the email or receives a voicemail, they react emotionally and they're frustrated and they can't put that frustration aside and then just deal with it. So the frustration then occupies them, like you just said. They tell a story. This person's in my way. They're irresponsible. They don't understand. Whatever the story is, they tell themselves. That occupies them for an hour. Then they writing the email occupies them another hour. And so all that, and in my life, as you already know, and it's like I just pick up the phone and I resolve it as quick as possible in relationship and then move on. And I think you also hear, because you also can tell in a conversation if someone isn't able to tell you something.
Yeah.
And because they usually say, well, and then they'll, I'm not sure. And then, and I'll, you know, because of how I work, I'll say, hey, I hear you're not saying something. So I'm assuming there's more going on here, you know, so I'll just address it more directly. But that's also some skill, of course. Yeah.
Why is falling forward important? I mean, I want to start just digging a little bit more into this, by the way. Why did you pick up this subject?
I picked it up because there'll be themes that come up either on other shows,
yeah,
or when we'll talk, and they'll be like, "Oh, I forgot how important this was." And you even said it. I liked what you said earlier when you were challenging my state, saying, "Andy, you can't quite understand what it's like to not be able to have that state of mind because you're so far away from it." And in a way, I'm like, yeah, you're right. I forget because I'm not living it on a daily basis what that feels like. Hmm. So there's not as much compassion, of course, if you don't feel into it. And yet I know that when I'm not in that state, I don't get shit done quickly. I don't do it effectively. And I'm not... The people I work with don't get the value that I can really deliver.
Just because you're not fully present.
I'm not fully present and I'm guarded. Mm. You know, there was a project I did where somebody had a project that would usually be pretty big. We're going to do a vision mission with a company that's got, you know, a few dozen people. And I'm a single person. And they don't want to have any group meetings. So I've got to create a vision and mission for an entire company with no group meetings. And they all have to buy into it. And I totally into this and I'm buying into this vision of a company. And so on one level, I was like, well, that isn't going to be easy. On another level, I just sat there and the falling forward was my directive. I said, you know what? I'm going to act quickly. I'm going to iterate quickly. I'm going to include everyone quickly so that everyone feels like they've always been in this process. So basically, I arranged individual calls. I gave everyone all of the information to say what I was consolidating. I shared my difficulties, so I didn't try to pretend like there wasn't challenges in doing it this way. So they understood, you know, what we were trying to achieve and how we were trying to achieve it. So they bought into the process, not yeah. only the outcome. And in the end, it became a single document that articulates actually what they want to do. And they've all, and because I hadn't planned it this way, they've all signed signatures into the document where they are connected to the outcome. And this all happened very quickly because I just accepted. I didn't know. I wasn't sure, but I would figure it out. And if we failed, then we would just iterate and improve on it the next time, which is what happened.
Nice.
And I think that's sort of I've seen in myself, and I see people who are more successful in this type of being, they'll often not think about what could go wrong as much as what needs to get done and who needs to get involved to get there. And that's sort of a bit of a mentality of falling forward, is that I know whatever we need to figure out, we can figure out, even if it isn't perfect the first time, because I know who I'm going to need to get involved to improve it the next time. And the mindset that you poked to earlier that undermines that state of mind is fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So if a company has a leadership style, which is full of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, what you'll certainly see is people taking less risk, people feeling less comfortable failing, and therefore,
being open.
Yeah, and being open. And so it'll be a far more protective environment.
Yeah. Not sharing, I don't know this, but I'll...
Yeah, they'll pretend they know, fail, and then try to explain why they didn't get it right and, you know, blame someone else usually for it. The thing that's come up for me recently is the book, the third book, which we don't have yet. In writing the third book, I wrote it quickly, probably quicker than the first two even. And I worked with the editor and got it to a state, and I gave it out quickly to, say, 10 to 15 people.
I was one of them.
You were one of them. And what I saw was that I embraced the fact that I'd have to learn. But what I thought was interesting is when the feedback came back in a way that I wasn't getting the like joy and happiness I expected, it was not emotionally easy. But what I also saw was that I gave myself a week off, and then I started to write and reiterate on it again. So falling forward doesn't mean I'm not emotionally feeling bad about what happened. It means I'm going to deal with it quickly so that I can continue to iterate quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This show started with an iPhone.
Yeah.
Then he ended up with an iPad, and Andy wanted us to pretend that the guest was sitting with us. So we took, I don't know what it was, a broomstick. We put a helmet
on like an iPad,
his helmet, and then we stuck the iPad inside. So the person's face was here looking. So if ever you go to the first shows we ever did, what a fucking disaster. But the funny thing is, it didn't even feel like falling forward. They were like, oh, now we have an iPhone. Oh, now we have an iMac. Oh, shit, the camera's nowhere. Oh, the technology's breaking down.
Yeah.
And we kept on, as we moved along, we just said, as long as we're having fun and we're surrendered and we're not trying, and it's like the moment shit happened and we would get stressed, we would take it seriously. We would, oh, no, what are people going to think about us? The moment that would happen, we would not have been at 269 shows, right?
We wouldn't. I remember some of those early shows.
Really bad.
Yeah, they were bad. And I saw that you were a little bit anxious to begin with.
Yeah.
And I think you, in some ways, this is the feeling I had. You saw how I was taking it. And I think you adapted to my way of being in it.
No.
Was that fair to say? Okay, not. No. What was it then?
My bank account. We started in COVID, and I remember the first shows.
Okay.
I lost 35,000 euros worth of contracts
immediately
in like 3 days.
Oh yeah.
And I was coming here doing this,
but I
was not in a good place.
Oh, you're saying independently, because you just were in such a triggered area anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew doing this show, that stuff would come up.
Yeah.
Which means a lot of tears.
Yeah, now that you're making the money again, now you're like, I don't have anything to cry about anymore, you know?
No, I got a lot of people are reaching out to me like, oh, it's so nice that you're in a relationship. I know that you've been yearning to be in a nice relationship.
Yeah.
Everything seems to have fallen into place in a way that I didn't even imagine.
Hmm. Thank you for being with us. A wonderful chaos.
It's a wonderful chaos. We like it that way.